November 7th, 1979, at Walnut Manor in Anaheim.
As I come to the end of my eldest rumblings about Long Beach and our life there, I must not forget to answer some of your specific questions about those years. Now, you asked me how Long Beach was before the war and what kind of people rented then. And I can tell you, Long Beach was already in 42 when we got there, was in the war. And Douglas plant was going and was employing a lot of people. The shipyards were established. And also several big companies had come to Long Beach. Like Ford and the Procter & Gamble Soap Company, and the docks were busy getting ready for repair places for the ships and all that when we got there. But everything privately or the needs of the citizens as such had to take second place to the war effort. That came first, and we were requested by the government to turn our house over to regular renting, so it's because they needed housing for the war effort, for people they needed there, which we did. And at that time, too, the Office of Price Administration was enforced because the landlords would have could have raised the rents no end with apartments being so scarce. So I could see why they needed that, but we were frozen pretty low. The company that sold us the apartment had raised already, and so the OPA made them or requested that whoever owned the building repay the tenants with what they had overpaid. It was put in force retroactive. Well, we got over that hurdle, and it took a time until people adjusted to all that. It all happened so fast that you hardly had time. And I must relate now why all this that happened to Long Beach affected the rental business so badly. First of all, in 1929, the stock market crash came. That affected all the people of the land, and people thought of holding on to their money a little bit because it got more scarce, and so it affected the apartments too. And then in 1929, came that awful depression. And Long Beach at that time primarily was depending on tourist trade. That fell off. So the man that built the Lyle, and it was said that it was a very expensive building and a show place, one of the newest buildings at that time, and that he had paid $1,000 one foot frontage and build it at the highest prices before the crash came.
Do you know what year it was built?
18. Well, from 18 on, it was started in 1918. And you see, when he should have made money, he borrowed most of the money to build it and do it. Well, then the renting fell off, and the money got scarce. And the whole of Long Beach was pretty stricken by it, but they worked out of it somehow, and by 33, it just started to get bring a little let up when the earthquake came, and that took away the entire tourist trade from Long Beach. So from then on, that's when the man lost everything he had, and then times were very bad all over. I suffered and everybody else suffered from lack of food and everything else. It was a hard time to go through. But then the other people in the land as such could recuperate a little, and there was this war in Europe, not going yet, but it was coming, and you knew something was coming. The countries all did and were watching. So then when other cities could work already a little and things became big, Long Beach on the 10th of March, 1933, was hit with that awful earthquake, with the loss of many lives, and boy, it just went down again in the ashes, and many people lost all they had and took their lives, and it was a bad time. We weren't in Long Beach yet then. We were also within these conditions of the depression. Well, until the 40s came, the 40s, that was many years then, Long Beach had taken its first breath again and was, and the war was coming, you know. In 41 we got married, and that was the week after Pearl Harbor. So after Pearl Harbor, everybody stood together like one man, knew what to do and where to help. And so everybody did. And that brought work to Long Beach and money to Long Beach. And because they had the facility and their government was alert to it and active and knew what to do, it worked out of it fast. And but private things could not be taken in consideration until the war was over. Well, when the war was over, there were plenty of jobs, much to do. Then Long Beach emerged as a city of recognition. That's when they pronounced it the international city, because of our natural harbors, our oil riches. The first oil drilling happened in around those years, and the offshore drilling that brought money to Long Beach. And so it grew to be the city that, as we knew it then, had world recognition, played a big part in the war efforts, alone because of its stocks, and it became one of the biggest transportation centers toward the east. And so those were very fruitful years, although, of course, it had a shadow side to everything. When it was gas, and you asked me how come you couldn't have stock, and so that was all of no concern. They needed all the nylon they could get for the airplanes and for the war. And only what was left over you could divide. And I was in sort of a bad spot because my husband wouldn't let me have a charge account, I told you that before. And on the other hand, he also couldn't see the way I thought to take advantage of the conditions and buy some more real estate. He wanted everything paid, not a cent of debt. Well, I had experiences in Europe with two inflations, and I lost all my money. I could see it better, but he said, you've got all you want. Why do you want more money? What for? And so on. Well, he was he had his talents in another direction, and he was a good man, and in some things, you can't force men if they are strong-minded. And I didn't try to. I really didn't need it. So badly, only the bad thing in my part was that I had so much money coming in to spend and couldn't spend it really in a big way towards helping, you see. And that's what I regretted. There was so much want like there is now with sickness and all in the world. You could do a lot of things if you had a bigger income. Well, we were going along with that pretty good. And in the 60s, then in the 1960s, things started to get going privately in Long Beach. The Civic Center really became a plan. Adopted, and we in time found out that we really were in the it was adopted for it eventually. Then you could at least think what could you do for the future? How should you act now? And you see, all those buildings were already going down, being taken off the streets, and our neighborhood was kind of bad, with the exception of all the good hotels like the Blackstone, Sovereign, and then us up here, and the newer. It was a bad neighborhood. It's a sailor's town, and the sailors congregate and sit there near where their ship is, and there's always a flock of women that follow them. And much drinking and so on. So in order to keep a respectable place, you had to have your eyes and ears open and be strict with enforcing certain rules, which we did. And so after the war, slowly our former visitors, our guests from the East, Middle West, and from Canada, come back, and many, many working class people settled in Long Beach. Now they have good jobs. The money is coming in plentiful, and Long Beach grew by leaps and bounds. With all the old things that they did away with, like the rainbow, the pike is almost all gone, and started to get less and less by then, and many institutions that they had. When the smaller, sleepier Long Beach was alive, were replaced by a band shell, by the Civic Opera Company. The San Francisco Opera came culturally. And in 1960 also, the Long Beach, the California University at Long Beach was started. And built on that huge piece of ground out on 7th Street. And so you see many, many things happened to Long Beach. Long Beach then was really and truly an international city and became renowned. I was glad, though, that they kept their name by the friendly city. It was called in their old colors, blue and white and gold, and they kept the phrase of the international city. We got to have Miss Universe in down at Naples. The Christmas parade on the water started, which was outstanding. There were so many things by then, and we had the red car taking people to Hollywood or wherever they wanted to go, which was a big attraction to people from far away. So Long Beach came back to being a resort. You also asked me about Venetian Square.
Okay.
Venetian Square had gotten old. It had existed for years and years. And in the wartime, the Navy and the city needed a lot of that land to build a new installation, the SOS. The soldiers had a YMCA over there. The Navy landing was there, and all those installations. And don't forget, with the purchase of the Queen Mary, how many piers got filled in and how much ground was used. It's time for going. For the Venetian Square had just come. It was, I no doubt it was older than our Lyle and had brought lots of money to owners. And so it was with all the cities. That's why Long Beach always gave you a feeling like a city in the making. Either the war did it or afterwards the change of buildings and the prominence that Long Beach had gotten and the things the city wanted to have for Long Beach to keep it a tourist place. All that made you feel like, you know, it's nothing is too permanent. And now, where we're going towards a real cosmopolitan city on the Pacific, naturally these old houses and business places like Walker's and Buffum's and all of them have to quit and have to stop, and something new is not right there in its place. It takes time. And of course, if that happens while it's going on, excuse me, a city doesn't appear too pleasant. You walk around our main business street, the center of Long Beach today, Pine Avenue, and you wonder, you look at all the empty stores and at all that's going on, and you just wonder what's going to happen. Of course, all the extended Long Beach down Ocean Avenue with all the new buildings and the clubs that have started, and it's going on, it's in operation, so the people of Long Beach will just have to stick it out until it's completed. It has a big future, I think. I am so proud of that. In a small way, was a part of it. And I can say with good conscience that we were law-abiding citizens and did what the city wanted us to. And we naturally, we had our life and our nice profit out of it. And so when the time came that we truly knew that the city was leaving that location, was buying it all up, naturally we got ready to, in our minds, we got ready to make the move and to cooperate with the city because they had gotten that ordinance out of the buildings that were hurt in the earthquake couldn't ask more than what they paid for it, and here the money had gotten so inflated. In my case, they would have taken a big, big income, and I would have had enough money to buy maybe 3 apartments. And I wasn't going to take that laying down. Of course, they thought it over, and I guess they got many complaints, and they took the ordinance off, and you could get a better price for it.
What was it like when you went to the city council meetings all the time?
Oh, I just sat there and listened and talked with others. You see, we belonged to the Apartment House Association, where you could get quite a little information. I went up and looked at the plans when they exhibited up where they took care of that part of the city's work. They exhibited plans. If you were good at reading them and understanding them, you could get quite a little information. One thing was sure, everybody was agreeing that we needed a city hall. They had rented so many buildings already for part of their work. Look at Omar Hubbard was, I think it was bought by the state for their business in Long Beach. It was in existence quite a long time after us because it was owned by so many people. You see, we owned the lot, but the Omar Hubbard was owned by many people. And today, when you go down there, you know, with the new library and everything in the new city hall, you know, Buffum's is still and kept the business and building, but still it looks kind of old compared to some of the new erected buildings, especially all those new banks. And, you know, Long Beach now has an air of a big city, really a big city, because of its situation on the Pacific Ocean, the outlet to the east and all that, and the cultural mixture in Long Beach is so different. That's why many people scold and say, why do we have to print our stuff in two languages? We came from England or France or Germany or somewhere. We had to scramble to get the language and had to adapt ourselves to the new country. And here, the new movement, the young people, make us feel that we owe them that. We owe them support. Somehow, well, that's a newfangled idea. I don't know. Maybe it's necessary. I'm not a judge of that, but it seems unfair in comparison what other immigrants did in the country all over. You know, the situation now with the Mexicans. Our employers like them and keep them because they're cheap, or they must take work away from citizens here a lot, and we have to keep them too. It's such a betwixt and between thing, you don't know what. You need the wisdom of Solomon to do the right thing in cases like that. Oh my, I pity some of our leaders. One of them is President Carter. He gets into one hot water after the other. But this is a time, I don't know if I'm right or not, but I have a feeling we're at the end of a period of time. The time has come where things have to change. All around, you know, physically and spiritually and every other way. If men think by voting for a certain man or a certain party, and then they can go in there and change everything, they're just kidding themselves. What we have now has come over many, many centuries, and we all had part of it, and we're glad if we could get our, you know, get the benefit out of each situation. Kennedy, you know, the president that got killed, was so right when he said we should think what we can do for the country. That's more true today than ever.
Can I think
so? Yes, please.
You were going to talk a little bit more about what the Tennis and the Wild did for entertainment?
Oh, you know, I remember now they had the crystal ballroom was a big institution for the older people to go dancing every night and of the week. And what they did, they played cards, there were the parks, the Lincoln Parks, there was the All-State Society, was the picnics, there were the political goings on, there was Catalina to go to. And they had many diversions here, many in Long Beach. And a lot of them, our tenants, a lot of them settled for good as they got old. You see, I told you before, I kept a book. I had a big black book where I knew where they were from and where their kids lived and what doctrine, what ailment, what medicine. And that gave them a sense of security. Besides the services they got through their ending, they had this, and so that's why so many of them felt it was like home to come back. And when the years came and they couldn't live on their farms anymore and couldn't be on their own, the next step before going to some home was the Lyle. And not only the Lyle, all the hotels. And you know, a city girl's holding a citizen's gold with it. And the older people get, the less they like to change. We had some people would live two and three times there. We had a couple by the name Mitchell, and he was some kind of officer in the Navy. And he rented a front apartment. They were there for years and years, just so he saw the ocean for the rest of his days. And when he died, she moved back to some town in the Middle West. And, oh, she said, oh, the Lyle was just a dump. And, oh, she was so glad to get out of it. And she asked me, had to buy this and that. Most of it she gave away to other tenants, you know, dishes and stuff. Excuse me, just a minute. Oh, for instance. Then she went to this cousin or whoever it was and stayed a few months, and the first thing I got a letter, oh, Mrs. Berger, please save an apartment for me. Lyle is my home. I feel so strange here. And many of them, people from Canada and all over. And, you know, it makes you feel, made me feel kind of good to have that responsibility. You're worth something. Your life isn't just lived for yourself, or eating and drinking and sleeping and be merry. Your person is happier when he has responsibilities and does something like this. Well, anyway, many of them came back. The Johnsons both died there, and Mrs. Mitchell then got so sick she got... That was the time when General MacArthur had the operation and had this illness. So she said, I've got the General MacArthur disease, and she got all yellow in the face, and she didn't want the operation, no how. Finally, she had asked me to take it to the hospital, and my doctor told her to. She had to see that she get an operation. Well, the poor woman had met her relatives and was so mad at them and so off of them that she was so glad that I was there. I had to sign her things, get everything. And you know, when she died, she had much more money than I knew. And she had this cousin. The bank account was in the cousin's name. But then she had a smaller account and she gave it to our manager. And that manager would have gotten a dollar if she hadn't been so mad at Myrtle, because she was such a spendthrift. She was such a waster. And she said, I saved too hard. I still let her, but she got, they got $6,000-$7,000. And, you know, and the other bank book I sent to her cousin when she died. She ended with cancer. And you see, I took the responsibility with the hospital, so her bills got paid. But her jewelry wasn't taken and all that. And they trusted me. So it was something like a home for them. We never had trouble with any vacancies. Because of the city situation that we were in, the building was being torn down. So big repairs and big changes. You didn't want to wake anymore. I know we had the last time we had the light painted was in 60 or 59 or something like that, and that was always a big expense, and so were those two roofs and all. And we got very, very small rent. By the time the OPA was off, we couldn't raise, because we didn't do enough for the people anymore on repairs and paintings and refurnishings and all that. We told them we leave to them as they are. If you're satisfied the way it is, of course, we kept it clean. I had a concern that sprayed every month, and that we didn't have any bugs and all that. They were taken care of that way. But the carpet had to do, and the expensive things had to do if they wanted it that way. And nobody moved. You see, it was helping the old people too. And that's how we got through it. I mean, then when I was lucky enough to get that last manager and his wife, they were just excellent. Some ways I was very, very lucky. I had hardships and had bad things to go through, but if you face them and are not afraid, you go through them, and somehow you're rewarded in a way for it. I always felt that way, that if I do right, right is going to come to me. My whole life was like that. And, you know, with all chances, I took a look at my son having to go to war to Germany there. I didn't know if he had to shoot at his own grandfather and his own cousin. Well, then, because he had been working with technical things and telephones and things, they right away made a technical sergeant out of him, and he never had to shoot. He had to use in communication. Well, that was a big help to me. It's right there, and look at how my husband came out of nowhere where I had been so poor. And
you said the people that lived in the world went to political meetings. What kind of political meetings did they
go? Oh, well, there were religious rallies, too. They went a lot, too. And whatever, if somebody, like I told you, Eleanor Roosevelt spoke in a lot of, sometimes a senator and sometimes, I forget now who it all was, they go to the big park and listen to it and debate about it. You know, they weren't that old and decrepit that they couldn't take part of anything anymore.
What kind of religious meetings did they go to?
Well, you know the religious, like, what do they call them? Evangelism. And many of the men, if what's his name, the biggest one of them all, if he spoke anywhere in Longbridge, they would go and see him, hear him. You know,
Billy Graham,
or this woman that disappeared in the water on the end.
Oh, yeah. They would be from
Longbridge? No, but they went up to see, you know, at that time they had friends that could drive a car, and they went to all things like that, or they went to Catalina. Or wherever they had the newspaper, whatever was doing, they went to. You know, you remember the time when Long Beach had the gambling ships out there? Oh, what excitement. They all went out on those ships. They had to be outside of the harbor. It was illegal in the harbor. Well, I don't think there was a one that didn't go and try their luck. That's why Long Beach or Southern California is ideal for people with harsh climate, because the social life, you see, they had so many friends and knew so many stores, and so it was just natural that it would become their home finally. And oh, I felt so sorry for some of them that was with us so long, and now the city then, when they wanted the building out and empty and I suppose have it over with, they offered them a month's free rent, and just for the month of December, just before the holidays, if I had known then that they would let that building stand for years yet, empty curtains on it, and I didn't dare to take anything down what they had bought, I would have really gone up and forth with them about it, waiting till spring and let them in there until they can move in comfort. But you see, that gets into somebody's hands. So that's no personal feeling in it at all. It's just a business. Yeah, but the city is this much that if they were too poor to rent something or too poor to make the move, they would help them. There were just a very few that didn't find anything that they had to go to the hospital or someplace. And I made that stipulation that I wanted to give them the keys and be out of it, to take it as if I wasn't going to go through auctioning off all that stuff in there. And it was all old, and what would you do with it, you know? A lot of houses came down in that neighborhood, so if anybody wanted to buy something for their places, they had lots of chances those days.
Okay.
After I was rid of the Lyle and everything was settled, my taxes paid and the lawyer paid and what have you, I found myself a small own your own apartment in order. You see, when my husband was alive, we needed a bigger one because he was in a wheelchair and had to be able to get around. And so he had died then in 68, and while I was then gone, he couldn't help me with the city, with the business of selling it. He was gone. Then I bought that smaller apartment right in the same block on the 82nd Street near the park, and lived there until it got so tough in that neighborhood. That is, we had two old apartment house buildings on either side. Our 12 units of Own Your Own were built by a good builder and were new and were marvelous, beautiful. But what you had next door, because younger people bought it and milked those buildings, took just anybody that could pay their high rent. It was outrageous. Paid their rent, they didn't care what they were or what they were doing. In one house, if the landlord went to the government because they didn't want to stand for some woman making a prostitution house out of it, they helped them, those girls from the government, and they said, it's none of your business. That woman has to live somewhere with her two children, she had three children. She couldn't go leave them, so she made her money that way with men. But other people don't want to live in the same house with something going. Well, these landlords, these younger ones, they had only one reason for buying the houses, and that's to milk them and make money out of them. And you had units like that on either side. Oh, there were some good people, old people, yet, but the majority, the noise. And then I had a front garage. And lived in the front upstairs. And every night when they thought I was home, the cars blocked my driveway. There were two garages next to the downstairs apartment. I could never go out if I wanted to. Well, they figured it was so bad in Long Beach you didn't dare to go out in the evening unless you went in a crowd or a man went along. And so I warned some old guy with an old, dirty-looking thing. He was parked in front of my car several times. So I said to him, the next time, I'm really going to call the police, and you'll be towed away. See, he'd go to bed, and there it stood. And the next time it happened, I did. And naturally, it cost him some money. Well, his friends together in a few days, they used my vestibule in front of my door, my entrance to their toilet all night long. I nearly died. That finally, then I made up my mind I was going to sell it to you out of there. And then you didn't know if you did anything that they disliked, whether they wouldn't throw a rock at you and all that. They were just hoodlums that lived there. And then I was on in years, and then another thing happened. Three young boys from high school rammed into my car. My car was a total loss. We were two ladies in my car, myself and another friend of mine, and all five of us, none of us was hurt. But my car was a wreck. It had shoved the whole car. The motor was shoved in the back and all. I couldn't drive, you know, until they towed me off. But those boys were in a stolen car. Oh, they didn't call it stolen. They said it just loaded them in their lunch hour. And they were just they were at that age that they were learning the mechanics of driving to get their license. And they rammed out of the school, back in the school. I had to ride away, and they sure finished me off. And I took that kind of, like, a sign from heaven that I should quit driving. And by then I was 86 years old, but I was out with my car. I never had a accident or anything. And when the police came, they didn't want to believe me that it was my fault. Those guys, those boys, so young. and they cried, and they weren't going to go home and all. You see, they had fathers. And so I said, oh, stop your crying. I'll take you. So the police said to me, how could you be? Well, I said, I was looking for how someone didn't get out of their place in July. You know, I felt just sorry for them. And, you know, the parents and the boys, they practically did my moving, and I found the place in Leisure World. It drove me almost like I didn't have no car anymore. And that's why I moved to Leisure World, where the transportation was so good. And what they had to buy was enough for me now. I was tired of doing a lot of housework anyhow, and so I sold most of my furniture and moved to Leisure World. And I liked it very much then. I made lots of friends, but something wrong with my blood condition. I lived there 3 years, and I started to get fainting spells and would faint out at night. And the doctor and my son thought I shouldn't live alone anymore because, you know, it was too dangerous. And I didn't know then what I had. Now I feel a lot better if I felt like I feel since I'm in this home. I wouldn't have come yet here. But something with the white and red blood corpuscles said it's wrong. And they knew this health insurance I belonged to found out. They had me in the hospital and gave me all kinds of tests, and they found out what was wrong and have given me shots and given me medicine, and it's better. I didn't have, since I'm here, knock wood, I've never had one fainting spell. I get dizzy sometimes, but that's all. So I made up my mind. I thought, you know, at my age, in 1 year I'm 90, and I have lived a wonderful life. And what? You have to swing with your time. You don't want to imagine that you're 50 or 40 when you're 80. You know, you just take it, look it in the face, and make the best of it. Believe it or not, there's lots of nice things to experience yet, even if you're old, if you just keep your interests alive. And I'm still as nosy as I was when I was young. I don't know everything, and between it all, I never have time on my hands. My children don't come too often. They all have families, and they live 70 miles away. My son comes more often, especially since he lost his wife. But I consider myself lucky still, and I'm still in love with life. Now, okay. Well, the first person that I heard of that came to America was my great uncle, my grandmother's brother, whose name was Charlie Ziegler. And it seems he had a girl picked out to marry, and that was very pretty, so the story goes that our grandmother told us. And his superior officer fooled around with him. Grandma said, monkeyed around with him. You wouldn't stand for it. So he caught him in a dark place and gave him a good licking. And naturally, he would have been court-martialed or killed or something. He had to leave that very night. And in those days, you didn't need no papers, and then you had to go to the council like we did and all that. He got on some kind of an old ship. It took him 90 days to get from the German border to America those days. And he used to tell stories about the trip. And when he was by nature an army man. He had stayed. If he just stayed in Germany, he would have become a policeman or a public servant somewhere. But this happened. So he joined the army here in New Jersey somewhere. I don't know where he went. And all the years later on, he married a widow with 5 grown children. They were grown already and came from the same town. Anything that came from home was special to him because he was not able to ever see his homeland again. And he talked about them yet. He talked about the Hessians and the outfit he got into and all. in the war he was with, and when he died, it was a military funeral, and his wife got the flag they had his coffin covered with, and the shot and all that. To me, that impressed me immensely, you know. I thought of him like he was like a king or something. And my uncle came in young years. He's a chemist in Stuttgart, and his concern, they're all consolidated nowadays. It's a big, not corporation, they call it something else even, these chemical works.